Maybe we could just do a go around name where you're from, and if there is a particular media organization that you kind of roll with, you can share that. And I'll say, I'm David Cobb from Humboldt County, from Texas, living in Humboldt County, California. And I do stuff with both my local community access television station and community radio station, as well as the Green News Network.
I'm Lance Smith. I'm from San Francisco, and I'm interested in a variety of media, in particular Green News Network.
I'm Dick Galloway from Cincinnati. I went through the whole training to do radio on access, community access, and by the time I got through the training, the wheel turned, so I never had my own program, but that's years ago, and I still think that it's a very, very potent thing, and we all should be doing it.
Bob Park, I'm program director for WIDELP, low power radio station in Madison, Wisconsin. Broadcasting, archiving progressive voices whenever we can.
Marcia Squire, I'm from the Detroit area. I am here with politics and stuff, providing media coverage to all of our friends all over the country who weren't able to attend this week.
Sarah Martinson, I'm from Minneapolis. I do a blog called RiseUpTimes.org, and I work with WAM.
With
Women Against Military Madness.
Thank you.
I'm Say. I'm from St. Paul, Minneapolis, and I'm a media researcher, and I have a strong Facebook presence.
Okay.
I'm Joe Bon Giovanni. I'm from the Eastern Shore of Virginia, and but my media affiliation is with YouTube.
I'm Tana. I'm from North Carolina, the Piedmont, and I have been on the board of our local cable access TV station, and I am now have a show on our WCOM 103.5 low power FM station, progressive talk show.
Ben Mallinson, no current media affiliation. I work for a local newspaper in Massachusetts. And very briefly, and I've supported several networks, Free Speech Radio News, NarcoNews.com, and written a little for the latter, but nothing recently. And really interested in how the decision of how news gets pushed out to people, in any network, someone has to be making decisions. So how do we make a democratic network where the people in the network are making decisions?
I'm Jillian Thomas, and I live in Tucson, Arizona. And I work as a digital media manager for YWCA of Southern Arizona. And I was the social media director for the Stein Baraka campaign.
And Victor, what we're doing is name where you're from. And if there's a particular media organization or network or vehicle that you use, that you're currently using as a social change agent.
My turn?
It is your turn.
Victor Tiffany, I'm a co-founder of Revolt Against Bootocracy, and we decided, we're the founders of the Burning the Bus movement, and we decided earlier this year that it would make sense for us to have our own media channel, so we now have Revolt Against Bootocracy YouTube channel.
And Jenny, I don't know if you heard, we're doing name, where you're from, and if there is a particular media organization, network, channel that you're working through, share that with us, please.
Okay. I'm Jenny Coover. I'm co-founder of Democracy Over Corporations, which David Cobb was the initiator to help us get started 7 years ago, I think now. And as we progressed, we realized we had to do our own promotional videos to educate people because nobody else was doing it. And so we've started that process, but none of us knew how to do it. So we joined Athens Access TV, community television. And we were the first people, actually, to join as an organization because individuals would join. So I went there, and they taught me how to make videos with Final Cut Pro. And so now, as soon as we get our political platform finished, we're doing a series of educational videos about each of those platforms so I can take it with me when I run for Congress.
Wonderful.
And what we're doing is name, where you're from, and if there's a particular media organization or network or platform that you're engaged with as a social change agent.
Todd Knight, live in Mexico, no particular media platform.
Yeah. My name is Mark Schoegman. I am the executive producer of Spectrum 360 Media. I do the Spectrum 360 radio program, which is on five stations in the Tampa Bay area. And I also do the website Spectrum 360 Media. I do still photography, video. I'm the host of the radio broadcast and also the executive producer. And anything else I get thrown at.
And to our facilitator, you're up.
Oh, thank you. I'm Mel Figueroa. I am executive producer of the Green News Network. I am the press director for the Stein-Baraka campaign and a PhD student at UC Berkeley. Before that, I was involved in Pacifica Radio for more than a decade and indie media before that, which was kind of the original internet activist networking self-publishing platform. So I convened this meeting today. It's just going to be a meeting and less of a presentation talking head thing because, you know, especially having been staring down the barrels of all of the different media echo chambers, the Democrats, the Republicans, and the alt-right, I feel like we have the need to basically organize our own sort of coordination network. Okay, we're not talking about, and because we do this, you know, we have a, we can do it in a different way that's far more democratic, distributed, but also coordinated, because I do think that's needed in this moment.
And so I'm going to add on to that to really help sharpen the conversation, because you see, neither Mel nor myself. I won't speak for Jelly because we haven't been rolling this way. But
one last thing. Oh. I'm passing around a sign-up sheet if you are interested in ongoing work with media, with this kind of coordination. Please put your name down if you haven't already.
And so, as Mel said, the idea of creating some sort of like a network, maybe not even a platform, but a network. But I want to be clear, not simply to just like get out the information. Because we have an assessment that we are in the beginning of systems collapse, and that as the system collapse in historical terms, this is creating a conjuncture moment, a genuine crisis. We also believe between the ecological and economic and political collapses that are happening and these crises, it's literally, ultimately, society is going to be reorganized either on, let's call it a red-green kind of manner, a shared vision. Call it the Jill Stein / Bernie Sanders vision, if you will. Or it's going to break fascist. And both of those things are ultimately going to take a mass movement. In other words, it's not just that a police state and authoritarians can come in. You've got to actually win over bases and masses. And the right wing is ahead of us. The right wing is ahead of us, not just because they have money, but actually because they've taken media way more seriously than we have.
Yes.
You know, they are developing creative new platforms and networks and memes. How many folks here know what Stormfront is? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So what is Stormfront? Somebody raise your hand.
Right-wing fascist website.
It is. That's exactly right. And everybody, well done, Mark. You know, ding, ding, ding. And so now the thing is, there are a lot of sort of, you know, websites like this, but the right wing has acknowledged and understood that this is one of the key portals that you can go to engage in theory, conversation, political discussion, other nodes, right? And so one of the things that we think about as we're doing this is in local communities, like what's going to end up having to happen is that these things start to just, you know, spring up. And in highly populated areas, maybe they spring up a lot more, right? But they're starting to spring up. What we envision as the left sort of response is, whether it's on a community access show, whether it's on a low-power radio station, whether it's on a kick-ass community radio station like KFAI, whether it's an NPR affiliate where there is a token radical, right? Like what? Like I am the token radical on KHSU. Whether it's community access show, because like I was taking the notes, the Facebook channels, like all of you or many of you are already starting to do the like your examples of these. And I want to lift up Jenny and Dot. Thank you for the way that you described me as the sort of instigator or the provoker of democracy over corporations. I was at most just a spark. But the folks that were already there were already the fuel. They had already been working
we're
together.
The spark that was
here. Well, thank you, and I do like I love the thank you, and I'm honoring the sincere compliment that you gave. And I do think I'm the Tigger of the left, right? Like, that's what I
that's totally the Tigger.
Tigger start the fire.
And so my idea is, and so honestly, some of these will just be like that. Some of these will be more like this, right? And I would say Democracy Unlimited of Humboldt County is like that. DOC, Democracy Over Corporations in Ohio, is like this. Obviously, I think that folks, can folks see the next thing that ought to start happening, or that we're envisioning happening here?
Yes.
And our vision, right, is not... Or the other way around, I guess, Joey. But you get my point, right? Like this is our vision. It's a web, right? And as the deep ecologists that we are, we have this kind of sensibility that that's actually what we're trying to create.
I mean, part of it is the reason why... Are we live streaming this, or...?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I am.
Okay, I mean...
When you get to that point, we'll cut it off.
Okay. I mean, part of this is... sharing some sort of counter research.
Counter-terrorist information.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's weirdly because it's counter-terrorism from both the center and the right, right? I have had very intimate familiarity with how all of this works from both David Brock's CTR,
Who knows what David Brock or CTR is? But everybody who knows, I just want to get... And part of this is just gauging the room, right?
Right.
So over half do not.
Okay. So David Brock is a name that everyone should know about. He basically invented fake news. His major breakout moment was the smear campaign against Anita Hill during the Clarence Thomas readings. He was the mastermind behind that. He was a mastermind behind a lot of some of the Bush administration, campaigns, disinformation campaigns. And then he famously had a change of heart and, realized how wonderful and saintly the Clintons were, and then began to work for them through his, I think it's a nonprofit outfit, Media Matters for America, and then the 527 organization Correct the Record. 527 organization Correct the Record is notorious, as some of you may know from your own sites, of the paid troll campaigns that come and invade people's threads. I'm sure those of you who run social media platforms have encountered them every now and then. He is in many ways if you want to point at somebody, if you want to actually point a finger at a person, he's probably one of the most influential people in terms of creating the media landscape, the very crazy media landscape that we see today.
So let me take a moment to actually just edit and polish that.
Mm-hmm.
he clearly did not, quote, have a change of heart.
Exactly.
I just want to name it, right? Like, sometimes Mel's sarcasm is a little too subtle. So I really want to underscore, so this is a proponent of the neoliberal agenda, yes. Right? And so he did not have a change of heart. He didn't even change teams. He changed maybe the hat that he was wearing, but he literally was still playing for the same team when he was working with Bush, when he was attacking Anita Hill, and whenever he switched to the Clintons and Correct the Record. I think it's really important, those of us who want systemic transformational change have actually got to come to terms with there is the left, there is the neoliberal extreme center, and there is the far right, and that is those are the poles that are actually operating. And I'm not trying to get into you have to hold your nose and vote for Clinton, or don't ever do that. I'm not getting into that particular conversation. But we have to have some clarity about objective reality and what is happening. And so that is literally what is happening. There is a right-wing racist and nationalist,
fascist
media network that is coming up. There is the neoliberal center that is converging, that includes, I'll just say, most corporate media, and then within that concentric circle, you know, you have what is acceptable towards the left or towards the right. But what we're talking about is actually genuinely the left, genuinely progressive. This, there are only a couple of things, and maybe, should we do a quick harvest from the crowd?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so what would you consider to be some of the existing platforms that exist that would be bigger, not just as community organizing, but platforms that we might already be able to use that comes from our ideology?
Democracy Now.
Democracy Now, which is a great program, but what platform is Democracy Now on?
Radio.
And community. And internet.
So here is the actual, and this is the thing, again, part of this is drawing out the question, and the answer, actually, the real platform that is
Free Speech TV.
Correct. Free Speech TV is literally, Democracy Now! Was a local community radio station on WBAI, one of the Pacifica affiliates. There were five affiliates, right? And then she began to syndicate and go out and connect with community radio stations and low-power radio stations, but it was still a radio show. The folks over at Free Speech TV actually said they looked at all the progressive or all the talk show hosts, the top 10 or 20, and said there are a couple that are actually left progressive. Tom Hartman, Amy Goodman, a couple of others. They had the idea to go to them and say, can we put just television cameras on you and we'll broadcast it over cable access and then digitally and so forth. So I'm looking at the level of networks. So there's Free Speech TV. Thank you for Democracy Now! For spurring to this. What else is there?
Tim Black TV.
Tim Black. And again, a great show. What's his platform?
YouTube
and Twitter Facebook.
Twitter and Facebook. Yes,
so let's just stop for a moment, and I'm going to put, thanks to Jillian, I know that we should also, when we talk about social media, there's really three big platforms, right? Mm-hmm. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. To put our teacher on the spot now, tell us a bit about why those are the three in the world of social media.
Facebook has 1.9 billion people on it and 1.2 log in on a daily basis.
That's billion with a B.
Yeah. Instagram has around 700 million, and Twitter has, I think, 350.
So in terms of platforms, right, huge reach, and they do make it reasonably easy to access and use it. Does anybody want to make the argument that Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram are our networks the way Free Speech TV is?
No.
Right.
No.
So what we're getting, and here we go. So what we're getting at is these are platforms that we absolutely should be using. Let's continue to lift it up, but let's make no mistake about it. that we are not in control of those platforms. We literally, they are not responsible to us. Free Speech TV, we're not, quote, in control of, but they share a basic political sensibility.
So I just wanted to note, literally half of the world's population are on these three platforms.
Wow.
Yeah. The other thing, who here was at our media presentation yesterday morning? Okay. So I'm going to reiterate a few things, and Jillian, I might have you sort of expound on it a little bit, because she talked about it also in the social media best practices session, is that traditional media basically looks like this, right? Because of the technology, right? You had a TV or a radio or something, and then it broadcast it out to an audience. And meant the audience was largely passive, right? It consumed media, and it sort of lent to the type of communication of, like, the expert or the talking head, like, giving information to people, right? Social media looks a little more like this, right? There are reasons for that. Again, the fact that half of the world's population is sharing on social media basically has contributed to an information glut, right? So there's so much information right now and so much digital noise that, like, it, you know, that kind of distribution doesn't even really matter anymore, right? There are a couple of And this is actually in the social media marketing world, and this is where I'll have Jillian sort of pitch in, is leading to a kind of paradigm shift within the sort of profession and the art of social media marketing itself. You want to
say that it's more than just a distribution channel now. You really want to start thinking about it as building an organized online community and an engaged community. The more engagement that you have on social media, the more your post and everything is going to circulate in your followers' news feeds. That's how the algorithm works. And so thinking of it as more than just, it's important to think of it as more than just, okay, I just want to disseminate information to my followers. You really want to think of it as, how can I engage and build relationships with my followers on these and build a community online? Because that's what's going to take people and have them take action on what it is that you want them to do.
What does that sound like?
Activism.
So we have here a paradigm shift in which not just the way that the world is going, but literally technology itself has prepared the ground for a marketing model that is literally based on grassroots organizing. Technically, we should be and are the best at this. Literally, the ground has shifted in our favor, right? This is when Jillian said that, and I was just like, holy crap, you know? If in fact it is true that this model is on the outs, right, and that, you know, there's also Duke University does an anthropology of social media project where they literally say that actually money doesn't really matter that much anymore because you can spend as much money as you want to put out content and distribute content, but it's not going to get picked up unless people are engaged and you have communities engaged in sharing that information. If we were just coordinated enough and to actually know and realize that this is our wheelhouse, technically, we can beat all of them. We can beat the gigantic billion-dollar media machines because we have people, and people in this world means more than money.
But I want to bet true, and here is the asterisk, and it's a big one. I could have stood before you and said the same thing about, okay, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. What is that? The big bailout. All right, so there's going to be billions, and in fact, we now know over $1 trillion of federal government money is actually going to go in and bail out Wall Street. Oh, and the Wall Street financiers and the big bankers are going to take most of that money and give themselves raises and bonuses, and there's going to be a mass uprising with people who are pissed off about
about that, and that this is going to be a great moment to target Wall Street and corporate greed. And I would say, and of course, this is the left's wheelhouse. This is our issue. We're going to build up a great mass movement of ordinary people who are participating, pissed off at corporate America and pissed off at the federal government for being in cahoots with them. And of course, the organization, the network, the frame that rose up was the Tea Party.
The Tea Party.
Now, this is part of what I was getting, or we were getting at in the early framing of this, which is to say the right wing is ahead of us. And just because, I got you, just because this is our wheelhouse and we're better at it, I think that we have to understand that the right wing is actually on the move, organizing mass base.
Yes.
A mass base for a basic agreement on the corporatization of government, military, empire. What's that called?
Fascism.
There is it is literally happening now. So the old way of organizing our thinking, we're in a crisis moment. You don't continue to do the same things.
Would you describe for my viewers exactly what the Tea Party is? Is it kind of like not an actual party, kind of like the Bernie Crest maybe, where it's just kind of like...
So I'll take up your challenge with I will take up your challenge very quickly. But first, to say they're not Bernie-crats, they're burners. People who were inspired by Bernie.
There are some
that are staying within the Democratic Party.
So
I wouldn't do it that way. What I would say is the Tea Party was a natural, organic rising up of ordinary people. It was very populist, but it wasn't either left or right for the first 4 to 6 weeks, because remember, the Troubled Asset Relief Program actually was a reaction to the 2008 meltdown. So what president actually was responsible for the Troubled Asset Relief Program?
Bush.
Thank you, Anna Callahan, for the win. It was a trick question, because George Bush was a lame duck still in office in the White House. Barack Obama was elected. Most progressives were weeping with joy that an African American had been elected. Hope and change, our messaging language, right? So that's why languaging and messaging is important, but actually content proposals matter more. And so at the moment when there was so much anger, like, did any of you have the experience where your county courthouses or public squares were chock full of ordinary people just waving signs? It happened in Humboldt. Anywhere else? Yeah. Happened in North Carolina? Really? Are we only in our locations?
No.
It happened everywhere. And here's the point that I'm going to try to drive home, is the Tea Party was a organic, authentic reaction to the anger at corporate power, the anger at what was happening with the Troubled Asset Relief Program that had been designed by both Bush and Obama. Terry Geithner was actually part of both of them. Folks from Goldman Sachs and Wall Street America, the neoliberal extreme center, literally got together. It was a Bush-Obama plan rolled out under Obama, and the left was too busy congratulating itself on electing a black president, and they did. We collectively did not organize that, because that's supposed to be our issue, and we didn't. And 4 to 6 weeks later, the Koch brothers sent organizers and paid staffers and all that money. The Tea Party is our fault for not seizing on a moment that should have been ours. The Tea Party is not a political party. It is an organized movement that has literally now been hijacked by the Koch brothers and others. All that I was trying to get at around this is the kind of engagement we're talking about. The left has got to stop just talking to itself and sharpening our critique. We've got to start thinking about what does it take to actually win. The right wing is engaged in theory, in practice, and in a kind of synthesis. They're actually playing to win. And I'm afraid, and with credit to Mel, because she's literally right here, she's the one who taught me to start thinking about this. The left has, for the most part, stopped strategic planning to win. We seem to be satisfied with, well, we can't really win a new society, so instead, let's just sharpen our critique ever more. That's what Speak Truth to Power is about. We can't actually take power, so let's at least just tell the truth. You know, and what that ends up being is a level of sharp analysis that actually is not strategic planning to actually win. Because I will tell you, we are revolutionaries, and we're in it to win it. Right? So that's part of what we're doing, is trying to convene spaces so that both community organizers and networks and organizations can find ways to work together. And we'll turn it back over to you for the media part.
Yes. So one of the things, what is the importance? I'm gonna sort of open up this question. What is the importance of media in politics? I don't want to just say electoral politics, but politics writ large. This is like a big picture question. I want to hear what people think about that.
Define the narrative.
Define the narrative. Okay, that's good. Do you want to elaborate on that, or in what way? Or do you have an example?
The mainstream media and people out there, everybody has their own interest when they decimate the information. But we have got our own interest. So our interest should be reflected in the media we are spreading out.
Absolutely. Okay. Any other thoughts? What the power of the media is? Yeah.
Well, it shapes us at a pretty deep psychological level that we're not even aware of.
Mm.
So those of us who are boomers,
right?
There's a lot of thinking at a deep level, while people know that Soviet Russia did disappear in about 1991. That we still, many of us, think of it as being Soviet Russia, and you'll see that frequently on media.
That's right. Donna Brazier's tweet about the communists.
Okay.
We define the spectrum of the discussion.
Redefine the spectrum of discussion. Who here knows what the Overton window means? Okay, the Overton window.
So just as an organizer, since you had a hand, what I would have done is harvest to ask somebody in popular education style to tell us what Overton window is.
Do you want to take a crack?
Sure. It's a theory developed by a guy whose last name was Overton. It was named on his behalf post-mortem. He died in an airplane accident. His idea is that the range of acceptable policy positions is shaped very slightly by the politicians themselves, but mostly by movements from grassroots. So, for example, the Tea Party movement ultimately ended up shifting the Overton window to the right for a few years, and then Occupy movement shifted Overton's window to the left, where it's slowly drifted back toward the center since Occupy was crushed by the Obama administration.
And so here is another example that I think is really, maybe it's a generational thing, but how many people know what the Powell memo is? I thought a lot of hands would go up. So somebody who we have not heard from a lot, tell us what the Powell memo is.
Well, Lewis Powell, who was a Supreme Court justice, was a corporate lawyer before he became a Supreme Court justice. And he basically laid out the entire strategy for the right on how to shift the debate, shift everything to the right. A pretty comprehensive strategy involving education.
When did he write that?
1970.
It was a very long game.
And here's the point. If you read it, and you should, in the Powell memo, Lewis Powell, who was at that time a corporate lawyer, a private citizen, wrote a memo for the Chamber of Commerce. He laid out, and his problem was, and agreed with the Chamber of Commerce, was that you had the Naderites, and you had all these good government groups and environmental groups and citizen action groups rising up. Because for some of you may know and may have lived through it, others of us read about it, maybe we were watching on TV as little kids, but see, in what we call the 60s, but what we really mean is the late 60s and early 70s, that moment, the ruling elite were literally afraid that they were about to completely lose control of the country. Do you know why the ruling elite were afraid that they were about to lose control of the country? Because they were about to lose control of the country. I mean, it was a revolutionary moment. Thank you, Nils, for the win. They were literally afraid that they were losing the narrative. What is the good life? Materialism was being challenged in a way that had not been challenged at all. The consumer-oriented society. There were new ways of being and doing and relating to each other. I mean, it is this great high-water mark on what was actually possible, right, within society. Lewis Powell, there's a special place in hell for him, because what he actually said is, what we have to do is root out the Naderites and the communists and the leftists from media institutions and educational institutions and legal institutions. And he literally wrote, it is a roadmap to what the right ultimately did. And the reason that Overton's window is a real example of this is because they said, and we've got to start creating our own institutions. Thus was born the Heritage Foundation and the Cato
yes.
Institute
yes.
and a whole grouping of right-wing nonprofits who began to say things that were insane in the cultural narrative, like, we should not raise taxes. They were saying things like, you should abolish the Federal Reserve. They were saying things that any number of things would, at the time, were crazy. But this is part of the thing. You have to be playing the game for the actual frame and narrative. And the last thing that I want to say is, Lewis Powell, who wrote that memo, went on to where?
Supreme Court
of the United States, and authored the beginning of the next wave of corporate constitutional rights decisions. He authored Buckley versus Vallejo. He authored Virginia versus Board of Pharmacy. He authored with the intellectual framework for the entire notion of corporate constitutional rights. I got you, Victor. And the last thing I want to say, what political party was Lewis Powell a member and leader of? He was a Democrat. And at the end of the day, what we've got to do is be willing to confront the reality that the neoliberal center is actually comprised of both members of the Democratic and Republican Party. And that's just objectively true. So folks who are still in the Democratic Party, y'all got work to do. You've got a gut check moment to either take that party over or get out. Victor.
Well, Vallejo was written in Curium, so how do you know what parts that he wrote and or that he authored any of it? I mean, his fingerprints are all over it, but how do you know he had a role in that?
Well, I mean, are you talking about Powell and the Powell memo itself?
No, Buckley v. Vallejo. Did you say Buckley? He wrote that decision?
Well, I mean, he did not author
it. It was written in Curium.
Exactly, so I guess what I would say is that because he was part of the collective writing process, we know, and all of the intellectual ideas are actually directly attributable to him.
Certainly the redefining, which I didn't find out until Corruption in America from Ben Franklin's snuffbox to Citizens United, that decision changed the very definition of corruption.
How about that? Again, law matters.
Yeah.
Law matters.
Because we're running out of time, I wanted to bring this to where I wanted this to go, which is something operational that can come out of
yes.
this convention.
Let me segue into this. And so here is the point. I think it was fantastic. What we didn't actually do here, but I do want to name it, because other thing the media do is actually it's supposed to share facts.
Not at all. It was not that.
So I do want to just point out that
we're old school.
This is still important, y'all.
It creates consensus on what's a fact.
It does. Yeah. And so, at the one end, that's great that we were so Gramscian and big picture, but I do want to actually get back down to what we are actually trying to do is to make sure that we're presenting facts in a narrative and a frame that actually makes sense to people. And that's, again, what our little dots ought to be doing media-wise or community organizing-wise, and we're moving towards a network. So go ahead, sir.
Well, that may be, but the fact is that most people's decisions in
think America is not based on facts.
So we shouldn't bother about facts?
No, no, no. But we
also have to deal with people's emotions, because that's what people, most people vote on.
But this is exactly where I'm trying to get to.
Okay,
right? So what I'm trying to get to is, if we get our shit together, okay, we get our networking things and we are able to coordinate ourselves, we have a number of advantages, right? And that's where I wanted to start out optimistically, because we kind of do need a little bit of hope at this point, you know? Look, we have a number of advantages if we can get our shit together. Number one, the technology itself is developing to a point where actual grassroots organizing is, you know, the skill set that we have. We have an advantage because we have the skill set for this technology. Number two, where's our Overton window? Let's look at the Bernie Sanders movement. I mean, Bernie Sanders' campaign was amazing for actually shifting this. Among us in this room, where would you think on this on the political compass, kind of our Overton window would be?
I apologize, I can't read it.
Oh, so the axis from here is from libertarian, you know, like sort of more freedom-based to authoritarian. And from here is economic equality, socialism, to sort of free market inequality, capitalism.
Depends
where do you think our
you
Overton
ask.
Would go?
We're in the upper right quadrant, so...
I'm sorry? No. We are in this room.
We want. Oh, where we want.
And the Bernie Sanders movement, like our team. Where would our team be? Sort of somewhere around here, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, like something like this, maybe? Okay, I know I'm sort of over here. where is the Overton window in the national political discourse right now between the Democrats and Republicans? Does anyone know that?
Mid-right.
Nobody's actually got that out.
Right there.
It's tiny, and it's right here. We have a huge, right? And we have, and you know, I would say that some of our ideas, and especially nowadays, are what we call hegemonic in the culture, but not in politics, right? Things like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be shooting black people. Maybe we shouldn't be, you know,
That was a profound sentence, but I'm worried that it might have been jargony. Did everybody understand what Mel just said?
Yes.
Okay.
That
some people
we
didn't.
We have some cultural clout in that our ideas of economic equality, racial equality, gender equality, you know, moving in this more progressive direction, I think is something culturally that is probably shared by, like, you know, if not a majority of the population close to, okay? I think if you talk to anyone on the street and you ask them about these ideas, they'll kind of be where we're at.
They believe the lie, though, that, oh, that's all very good, but we just can't afford that.
Exactly.
We just can't
right?
afford
so,
that.
So if you look at people's dreams and what kind of world they want, it's in our window.
Not all of them.
The problem is that they're told by all of these, the ones that, the institutions that David talked about, that what's realistic belongs here. Right? So what we have is, so hegemony is a term that encompasses both political and cultural power. In the realm of cultural power, I think we are dominant. In the realm of political power, we are not. Right? So that is our challenge right now, is how do we move from a widely shared set of values to actually enacting those values in our society, right? To making it operational. And so that's kind of where I was trying to get at. I just really wanted to just get people in a room to kind of have us be on the same page. So if you have not yet signed the sign-up sheet, please do.
So I have Anna. Tell me your first name, brother.
Ben.
I have Anna. I have Ben. Jenny. You'll be four. Anna.
Oh, sorry. I forgot to say one thing, because there's our last kind of advantage that we have. It takes a lot of power to distribute a lie. We have truth, and we have facts. So, like I said, if we get our shit together, we could win. Anyway, let's get to this.
Anna?
Just a tiny little thing about framing. You write free markets on there. We could never use that phrase, ever.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. But it just
thank you. Constructive critique, well received.
Capitalism and oligarchy.
That's
like
good.
Capitalism and oligarchy.
Focus.
That's good.
Thank you. But what I also wanted to say is that
a starting group called the Incorruptibles. We're starting grassroots chapters in every city to take over local government. But we are thinking very strategically in the long term of taking over all of government and about how we frame our messages for, you know, red states, blue states, you know, rural areas, people who are culturally Republican. And so we think a lot about these things, and we also think a lot about security. So that's why we have our own private server with our own open source technology. I mean, not ours, but like with open source technology to run a Slack alternative, which is a group chat program. So if anyone is interested in getting involved, please take my card and get in touch with me, and we can continue this kind of conversation.
Thank you, Anna.
I'll just pass it around.
So I have a stack. I'll do another round after we finish the current stack.
Just that, you know, we all want to coordinate, we all want to work together, and we keep not succeeding to do that, and that's a lot because of issues of control. Do we actually trust that person? How do we all of that? Mm-hmm. So I think we need, we all need our own networks and to grow it and to have followers and engage communities, but we also need, like, really, really, really large networks for broadcasting when we think something is important. Like, broadcast still has to be there for you to have a functioning society so that there's this minimum level of what people all know about so you can have a national, international conversation or even more local. And so, I mean, my, you know, plea is to have us also develop technologies that are actually democratic at their base so democratic moderation of communication. And the only way I can think to do that is just a technical hack where you allow, where you're saying, I think this message should go out to all 10 million people in this group, and you just ask, you know, 25 people at random from that group, is this message important enough? And so that's one thing I'm
Lumia
building.
Lumia is a great technology.
I talked to them, they don't want it, they don't think it can scale beyond, like, you know, a few hundred. Okay. So it's a very different thing, but yeah, Lumia is awesome, so I just, you know, that's what I'm working on, and if you
what
know anyone else
mean?
Is working on
what
that,
does that mean?
Lumio is for, like, small group decision making. Like, it's for democratic decision making in online groups. It's fantastic software run by a software cooperative.
No, that's
but I'm working on
spell it.
LOOMIO.org. And then my group you can reach through people who give a damn, PWGD.org. But, you know, we don't have operational stuff like Lumio does.
So Lumio.org. Mal, did you want to react?
Yeah, you know, that's precisely what I'm, like what I was thinking about, like, especially with the Media Revolt and some of these other, like, organizations, is that we have a place where we can talk amongst ourselves and sort of decide on a consensus of you know, I mean, or if somebody is in a particular situation, like Berkeley, and saying, look, we need to get this story out, you know, please just, like, get our story out, we can do that. I mean, because you know, consensus can take a long time, but if somebody needs support and help, we need to give that support and help. So there's this, and then it can go out to public-facing. Remember, it's very, very difficult to transition audiences from one of these platforms to a more secure platform. So what I was actually thinking about was having private, like, more private places where we can coordinate amongst ourselves, but then be able to broadcast it out to the 10 million people on those other platforms.
Imagine a Reddit of the left is how I think about that, and that will happen if enough people begin to actually do coordinations. One of the things that this democracy convention was specifically designed to do was exactly that. Like, have conferences on different sectors or different big groups. Media was one of them, but then to really intentionally cross-pollinate more and more and more.
The end of the stack.
Yeah, it has to be on the end. So I've got, you're the last one on this stack. I'll start another one, you, and you will be one, too.
Hi, my name is Sean. I live in Santa Fe area, New Mexico. I'm oppressed by my email. Mm-hmm. I'm repelled by my Facebook. Mm-hmm. I am not even in Twitter and Instagram's universe. I adhere to Sturgeon's law, which is that 90% of everything is crap. And on the internet and on social media, I'd be willing to extend that to 99%. So any media networking, any new ways of getting that information you create, please make it tiered. So that, for example, if
I want to go on Facebook, I'd like to make a tears. Like, I don't want to see my friend's dog made of cute crap on the floor. I do want to see if my friends are getting married or having a kid or someone in their family died. So, it's you know, that sort of thing would be helpful with this, too. I get emails. It's always an emergency with the National Sierra Club or Social Security Works, and ten of them have to notify me about anything that happens anywhere. It's emergency, and you got to give us money. So right away, I'm already dealing with that, let alone all the great localized or underfunded organizations around the country or the world trying to get information to me. So it's like I got to have something that's like shaves off all of the crap.
Okay, so we'll do it. Yes. We'll do another round. Hands, if you want to make a comment, you'll be number one. Okay. You're passing. Number two. All right.
I'm looking for someone or some people or some group who can teach me email, Facebook, Twitter, all this stuff. I can't figure it out on my own, and I haven't found a group that teaches.
Jillian?
In Minneapolis.
Oh, well, it's online, but I teach music entrepreneurs how to use social media to leverage their platforms. It's called Auxer Inc. It's spelled AUXERINC.com.
Thank you.
And there's a lot of free information on that site, by the way.
Is there anybody locally you can teach?
Well, what level of teaching do you have?
So we have a stack. I'd like to be respectful.
But I want to respond to her because I'm local and I know where she can go. But I'll talk to her later.
If you could write it on the board, maybe I'm the only one.
It's right on the board right now. And honestly, talk to a young person. Talk to any young person.
Yeah.
Literally any, you know, like, we are all, I mean, look, I'm actually the old people of the young people. Like, people say I'm a young person. I'm like 39 years old. So, like, I still remember rotary phones. So, like, I'm kind of in that weird donut hole. But, like, anyone that's, you know, probably more than 5 years younger than me was brought up on this.
Yeah, I have a lot
so
of young friends.
It's their native language. 82% of
18
to
29-year-olds.
Yeah.
Then I'll tell you when we, later.
Victor.
A friend of mine came up with an idea a while ago of using, a listserv notification for those of us who are in the media. So that if any one of us get attacked by someone in the corporate media or Joy Reid or anyone else out there, we could put out a notification so that everyone on the listserv would find out about this and we could coordinate or at least be aware of the fact that this attack is underway. And I'm wondering if a listserv is sort of type of thing that we could, that entire network of media organizations, those who want to be plugged in, we dropped the idea because someone decided, well, we can use this to have discussions and this and that. And I said, God, no, I don't want tons of email. I just want alerts when we're under attack. And I wonder if we could have something like that at some point. And that's why I was actually asking about Media Revolt in this way, if something like that could be set up, or if we should maybe go to a private server where something like this could be set up so that all these networks who want to participate in sort of an alert, an attack on any of us, is an attack on all of us, so we all can respond and coordinate the response.
So there are various platforms for that. I also agree. I think email is not efficient at all to coordinate anything. Then it gets lost in your inbox. You can't find it again. So you need something where you can actually, if you're looking for a particular form of information, you know where to go to find it. I think that basically Media Revolt's basically like a Facebook clone. Right, so it works that same way. So you can like look stuff up, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's good. Also, I do think that the private chat things are good. They also have that disadvantage of like stuff getting lost, right, in the stream. But then there's also I know Bay Area, has a immigrant defense network that also uses texts. Like, so text communication.
An
so
alert.
If there is a real emergency, an alert goes out on your end, it comes in as a text on your phone. So I think a combination of all of these, each platform is useful for a particular thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to think about that, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, it's a combination.
So that was the end of the stack. Are there any other final thoughts? I got you. Got it?
So these are going to be, and Joe, all right, so one, two, Joe, three, say four, and then Mel and I will have some concluding remarks.
Just that the words about that we need a filter are absolutely correct, and the question is who is going to be that filter, who do we trust, and that's why, and I think we should all be able to be in our own networks and choose that filter. That's an important part of how to do it and what we do, and we need better tools for that. If we on the left create a tool that replaces and works better than email, you know, we are going to outdo the right corporations, government, everybody. Like, everybody is reliant on this tool still, and it's ridiculous. It's a really poor protocol for the current era. Like, there's so many problems with it. And so, yeah, I think we should be taking on that challenge. And again, the little piece that's specific that I've been trying to introduce to the internet for a decade and I'm trying to put aside my web development work to really focus on it is the idea that we can be in groups of thousands or, you know, even hundreds of a listserv bogged down if everyone can post to it. And you don't want to have moderators spend all their time doing that work. So if we share the work of moderation, if we can make this trick work of just having moderators called to serve jury duty to decide if this is something that's an emergency should go out to everyone by email, by text, by Facebook and Twitter accounts, by everything. So this central coordinating node that stays democratic because we're just sharing the work of doing it. That's the piece I want to introduce. So that's
number two.
Well, Lynn, I will tell you local sources and how to get instruction, okay? But the other thing was, I've done a lot of work on psychological warfare. This is a more big picture stuff, but there is something called the Legacy of Psychological Warfare. There's a book by the man by the name of Christopher Simpson, which, while not banned, is very difficult to get a hold of. And it's how the whole system developed that we are fighting against developed at the end of World War II. And I don't want to go into detail, but the legacy of that system is the deep state. And the way that it works is connections, overlapping circles of people. And it isn't a conspiracy theory, but they have people in the universities. They have people, we've talked about this, in the media. They have people everywhere in different parts of government. There's a dark side, which is, you know, PSYOPs and all the CIA and that side of it. But there's also a huge side, which is the psychological warfare or manufacturing consent, but it goes even deeper than that. And I just want to mention it because I think, you know, the model you drew was all those connections, and that's kind of what it is, except that they place people in all these... People are in all these places, and they all know each other, and they all, you know, it's like the interlocking boards of corporations, and of course, corporations are involved in it, and the think tanks, and all of it. So I just want to mention that, but that's what we're facing on one side, and on the other side of it, we need to develop our own network like that, and we do have it to some extent. But the media, I work on media because that's so much a core of it.
Could you write the name of the book she named on the board?
What is it?
Please.
Sorry.
Well, the author is I think it's called The Legacy of Psychological Warfare.
Okay.
The author is Christopher Simpson.
Okay.
We have several people. We're out of time, but if we could do the courtesy of listening to the last couple of comments or questions, if you would please be brief. Joe.
You're brief. Are we out of time? What happens at 10?
I mean, I'll stick around, but I want to respect that other people may have made plans based on the program that was put forward.
I didn't see anything on the program between now and 12.
There's not anything.
I have to pack.
We're going to give people an opportunity to leave. Mel and I will stay.
So, just real quick, here's the book that she mentioned. There's a good film called The Century of the Self that goes into this.
Called what?
The Century of the Self.
Could you write the author's name?
What was the author's name again?
Christopher Simpson.
Christopher Simpson.
Spell it. Christopher is...
I got it.
S-I-M-P-S-O-N.
Say?
Oh, sorry.
I just want to tell one suggestion that we all know that the mainstream media, the right-wing media are using certain particular language, that we have to create a group of people who are specialized in linguistic aspect of that, mm-hmm. and create an alternate, because this Orwellian languages are very serious things. It's maybe a simple word, as you mentioned, free market, but it has got it's carrying a loaded message.
Coded language.
So I'll do it and tell you, stop saying mainstream media, it's corporate media. Here's an example.
Okay. Stop saying regulations, they're protections.
So we need to create a group of people who are interested in this movement to create the language.
So Val and I will both have some final thoughts, and again, if folks need to go pack or just want to go leave and so forth, we'll stick around to continue, this will be the concluding of the formal session.
Yeah, like I said, all of what we have said about the power of the corporate media is true. What I was also saying is that we need to develop this is precisely why we need to develop organized counterpower. And I think, like I said, the situation is dire. And also, as I had said before, if we are able to come to a degree of coherency and communication, there are a number of things that work to our advantage. Like I said throughout Jill Stein's campaign, once I realized how they work, because had all of these efforts like directly against us, I realized, if we had enough organization and runway, we could do with people better than what they could do with money, because it takes a lot of money and an effort to manufacture a lie. We just have our truth. So that's all I want to say, and I hope that I'm going to send out an email, like an introductory email, to everyone on this list, and what I'm going to hope to do is form a group on mediarevolt.org so we can start, behaves exactly like Facebook. So those of you who are already familiar with that platform, there's no learning curve. You can post and discuss, and then there are some additional features. Again, it's still in development, so if there's something that we need, we can try to just get that developed as well. Okay, thanks.
So a couple of other concrete things. Mel and I are able and willing to come to do Movement School for Revolutionaries. That are one full day of a theoretical grounding that includes a level of strategic planning on how to react and respond to this. We insist that it be a full day because it's not worth it, frankly, for us to come around. If you might be interested in that, you can reach me directly. I'll put my, I have mastered the art of the scan and delete. And if you send me something that's super important, and after a week to 10 days, just resend it to me, right? Nothing personal, right? I know Nils and I have had email exchanges that sometimes are a couple of weeks in between. He doesn't, get mad at me for it. I don't get mad at him for it. I mean, one of the ways that I've tried to deal with the problem of the inundation is to develop some just personal techniques around it. So if folks are interested in that, one of the things that we're actually doing is building out an entire series of modules and trainings associated with both media as well as basic strategic planning and organizing. I mean, we're trying to make these tools available no matter what sector, no matter what issue, no matter what organization you're working on. Some of these things are just tools and training. We copy left everything that we do, right? We don't believe in proprietary interest in our intellectual property or the work that we're doing. We're just trying, because we're in a crisis. We have either hit the iceberg, or we're about to, right? So we don't have any kind of either ego or monetary interest in just trying. We are literally trying to shift. Because I'll say it again.
I'm literally trying to save my own life. Mm-hmm. So there we are.
We're in a revolutionary moment. Whether you like it or not, society is being restructured because the end of capitalism as an economic system is upon us. But don't cheer that, because capitalism is going to morph into fascism
unless we literally create a new social, economic, political institutions. One of the things that I actually try to get people to think about, and literally this is not very far developed, because it literally happened this morning. No, yesterday morning. There are some big constructs, right? Social constructs that don't exist except for the broad narrative that we're actually agreeing exists. What is one of the big social constructs that actually doesn't exist except for it does?
Race.
Thank you so much. Race doesn't exist except it may be one of the most important social realities that people have to face and deal with and grapple with. What's another?
Gender.
Gender. Literally, we now know it literally doesn't exist. Now, sexuality exists. There's all sorts of things that do exist.
Biology.
But the idea of gender doesn't exist. What's another? Joe?
Money.
Thank you. All I'm getting at here is what we're trying to do in these early stages is to imagine a new society. Literally, reconstructing how we organize ourselves as human beings. And I'll conclude with this. I want to be part of one that is actually racially and socially just, that is ecologically sustainable, that is actually democratic, and that is peaceful. It just so happens that those four ideas are the four pillars of the global international Green Party movement. And the reason I say this is to make it perfectly clear that I believe in order to actually win, not just to continue to analyze, but to actually win, it is going to actually take a social movement that is broad, deep, conscious, politically educated, and militant. By that I mean being willing to disrupt the existing system. And an electoral arm of that movement to be able to put into practice, into policy, into law, the ideas, and so forth. Now, I don't know if it's going to be the Green Party. Maybe it's a party to be named later. Some folks are trying to work within the Democratic Party. Maybe it'll be something else. But I challenge you to think about this. If you look at history of the United States, all the big systems changes, not just tinkering at the margins things, but real big things require social movements and electoral arms of those movements. So if you're not engaged at some level in electoral politics, you ought to do some level of electoral politics and do it authentically and honestly. Peace. So we'll stick around if people want to continue to chat, but I do want to make sure that for folks who want to leave...